children. We're starting.
That's right.
Showtime. Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 70 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audio2u.com. With me on the line once again via Skype from Melbourne, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hi, it's us again.
It is.
Here we are. Oh, boy. It's always the weeks just fly. They come around.
Suddenly,
Bruce is emailing me or SMSing me saying, right, we on for this morning? And I'm oh, yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. And here I am. it's just been such a crazy week. We have the upcoming photo imaging expo coming up in Melbourne.
Yep.
And if you're in Australia and you love photography, you've got to come. Spend a weekend in Melbourne because it's on at the exhibition buildings, otherwise known as Jeff's Shed in Melbourne, the Australian Industry Photography Expo. And I've just got so much to do there. I'm presenting three brief lectures on photography tips. I'm speaking to photo retailers on Saturday morning. I've got my own stand to run. I've got business appointments to make, and Kokan have asked me to put together a slideshow, a DVD slideshow of the images that I have taken using their filters.
Wow!
Because, well, I think Kokan are putting a bit of a push on, from what I get here in Australia, anyway, to sell filters. The digital era has no doubt impacted on their filter sales.
Yeah,
and they want to fight back, and so they should. Because the principles, as we've discussed on this podcast, still apply in photography, making the images count in camera as much as possible. So, yeah, I've got all those things to do, and the expo's on in May 6, 7, and 8. So,
right.
Lots to do, but that's okay. That's
excellent.
All right. Oh, preparing for my nephew's wedding, I have to photograph on Sunday. Shoots to do. Yeah, it's a good thing I'm young and fit and healthy.
It certainly is. Now, mate, you sent me a great email through the week with a link to a blog from a fella in Florida, and the blog is called Captured in Light.
Mm-hmm.
And just for the benefit of the listeners, I'll read this out. Well, what this guy has done on his blog is he's put a list of all of the photography podcasts together on one blog entry and rated them according to their usefulness to the listener. He rated Shutters Inc. at 90%, which I thought was pretty cool, because that means...
Nine out of ten.
What he said was, I'm rating these podcasts with a percentage scale where the percentage represents the quantity of useful information in the podcast. So he's basically saying that 90% of our podcast is worthwhile information. So that would be the 90% that Shelton says, and the 10% I say is absolute crap.
So, I was actually thinking it's the other way around. Everybody's sitting thinking, get this Shelton guy. Bruce knows what he's talking about.
but he said, Shutters Inc., 90%, audio quality is excellent, fast-paced and informative. This podcast from Down Under is one of my favourites. The host does a good job of keeping it focused, and the resident pro, Shelton Muller, is very knowledgeable and knows how to clearly explain things. So I thought that was great.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, well, so we'll put a link up to that blog.
So if you're listening to us, folks, you're not stupid.
Yeah, you already knew.
You already knew, but you're listening to a 9 out of 10 podcast here, so that's great. I don't know how we do it, because I'm just sitting here fluking the whole thing,
Yeah,
we got a load of emails this week, and I really look when you guys and girls email us and let us know that you're listening and you've got questions. It's just fabulous. So we really appreciate that, because it gives us. I mean, before we actually officially got on air this morning, Bruce and I were talking about the emails we'd received and the questions that had been asked, and we really appreciate it. You make our lives easy when we know what you want to know, other than just sort of grabbing subjects out of the air and thinking this might work. So thank you very much for that. First of all, Rob Fisher. You sent us some photographs of your time in Chicago. Nice architectural work, mate. And really, again, thank you so much for sending images through. It can be a bit of a daunting thing, I understand, to, you know, because I feel the same way when I'm, you know, presenting my images, even when I lecture at camera clubs and things like that, because you know that there are people in the audience who've been taking pictures longer than you've been alive in some cases. And here you are presenting your work, you know, and it can be daunting, no matter, you know, who you are or how long you've been taking pictures, to actually, you know, present images to people you know are pros or long-term photographers or, and, you know, I probably, a few of you might be reticent to actually, you know, send us some JPEG, some of your favorite shots. I'm never going to be cruel to you. If they're rubbish, I'll just put it in a very nice way. No, I won't. Thank you for sending those through. If you've had an email that says thank you for sending those through and nothing else, then that's just me being very, very nice. I don't think I've actually sent one of those. I have. But look, it's it really is appreciated, and they were really nice pictures, Rob. They really were.
I really liked the one he took. It was obviously a fairly long focal length of the reflective ball.
Yes.
Because you can only just spot him in the reflection, like he's way off in the distance. So he'd obviously handheld with a long focal length and done a pretty good job, I thought.
Yeah, I thought that. I loved the sort of it was a square scene, a city square or something like that, and it had the billboard with the man's face in it. And that's sort of like, whang, there you go. That's what you looked at. I don't know whether that was your intended effect, Rob, but thank you very much. If listeners are interested, and if Rob's okay, we'll even put them on audiot.com. Yep. They were really great. Richard Bowen, you also asked with regard to the use of your polarizer, circular polarizer. Good on you for getting one. Good on you for using one, because really, that's, you know, they are a must-have filter.
Yeah, how do you live without one?
Yeah, exactly. So really, yes, and as I emailed back to you, the most technical and scientific way of using a polarizer is by composing the scene and dialing the front. You know, there are ways. It's really that simple. And the idea of the dial is that you actually dial in the effect. You look through the viewfinder, you dial in the effect, you say stop when you like the effect, and that's how you take your picture. It doesn't sound particularly technical in the 21st century, but it is that simple. They are only effective, really, you know, they're most effective at about 90 degrees from the sun, but the you can use them, you know, at any angle, and you will get some effect. If you've got a circular polarizer, naturally try it for seascapes, because they're fabulous.
Yeah.
They are wonderful for that. Try it in a rainforest, just to remove some of the reflections that off of leaves. The problem often with rainforests is that there's so many highlights, you know, with the sun reflecting off leaves and rocks and moss and things like that, that your eye is darting everywhere in the image, and it could be rather beautiful, but all these reflections are, you know, a bit of a problem. So you can use your polarizer very effectively there. And naturally, of course, a landscape to make your sky nice and blue and to, you know, saturate the land, the colors in the land, because it removes reflections. Reflections, you know, basically throw light right up into your lens and actually remove some of the color saturation potential. So use your circular polarizer often. I look at photographers often who have a circular polarizer permanently attached to the front of their lens. I don't agree with that.
No.
One, you're losing a couple of stops of light all the time. Two, it is a Kohl filter, so it has this blueness to it, so therefore it's not real good with flesh tones. And it's just not necessary. Not always are you going to be, you know,
if
dialing out reflections.
If it's a cloudy, overcast day, then it's probably not doing you a hell of a lot of good anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, there's nothing to polarize. So, I wouldn't use it all the time, but it's certainly, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't have a circular polarizer, just get one, because you will find, especially if you're a landscaper or a seascaper, you will find great use for it all the time. So it's one of those must-haves. Circular polarizer, Sorry, go on.
Yeah, what I was going to say, my approach has always been, and I mentioned this to Richard on the phone because he and I have spoken about some other stuff. I said to him the way I've always used it has been to just, you know, swivel it round until the colours are the most saturated.
Yes.
Is that necessarily the correct thing to do?
It's as simple as that, really. Right. It is as simple as that. That's the whole idea of the dial principle. That and you can maybe go there and just, whoops, that's a bit much, and dial back, you know.
Right.
That's what we do, and I've often mentioned on this podcast the Kokin 173 blue-yellow polarizer.
Yeah.
I mean, if you overdial that, it just goes, wah, and, you know, hello.
What does wah look like? It's
imagine wah as a visual, and you get a pretty good idea. It looks like you can look like you're on another planet. You know,
right.
I think they use that filter for some of these sci-fi films when they go to the outback and it's right. Australia, like they did with what was that movie
Wolf
that
Creek?
They made? Well, no. Wolf Creek is one, but they actually made a movie about going to Mars, and they filmed it here in Australia.
Oh, right.
I think they filmed it in the heart of Adelaide. Actually, they needed a vast, sort of desolate area. They
scrub off another 20 listeners from the database.
All right, all the Adelaide, just all the Adelaide people have just gone. No, I speak too fast for Adelaide people, so they're able to understand this podcast anyway. What was it called? Planet or something like that? And, you know, they probably use the blue-yellow polarizer for that.
Right.
So I would get one of those, but just, yeah, you know, dial it in and then just dial it back just a little bit. But that's the great thing about polarizers. So a circular polarizer, a blue-yellow polarizer, the Kokin 173, some graduated grays or neutral densities. You know, these are must-have filters for your, especially if you're a landscaper, to you know, have in your filter kit. So thank you for that, Richard. Let me know if you need any more help with that. You know, we're always happy to help here. Getting through the email, Carl. Thank you very much for letting us use your image. If you go to audiotu.com and you see a beautiful studio portrait of a very pretty young girl. Am I right, Bruce?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very pretty young girl in a studio situation. Carl
and has great lighting too, Carl.
Yeah, very, very nice. No burnt out highlights, nothing. Very nice, tight cropped image. Very nice. No bad hot spots. You did a really good job there, mate. Mm. We're very, very proud of you. I mean, you couldn't go wrong with that face, but you could always light it wrong and, you know, overexpose it. But the image is very well executed. And Carl's point was, as we said in this podcast a few issues ago, that the Fuji S5 pulls out a beautiful portrait straight out of the camera because of the nature of its sensor, and this image proves that. The S5 has received some interesting reviews by people like Ken Rockwell and DP Review, saying that it certainly has its disadvantages. It's a little slower than the D200. Naturally, it hasn't got the high pixel rating of the D200.
Slower in what sense?
Slower in terms of how many frames per second it can capture,
right.
and how quickly it is to respond in terms of displaying the image and firing. Mm-hmm. Fujis tend to have that as a bit of a burden in their software, and they haven't been able to overcome it to the degree I'm sure they even want to. So a lot depends on how you're planning on using this camera, but the Fuji S5, even those who have said, look, I'll stick with my D200, thank you very much, have said that the flesh tones and the highlight and shadow detail from this sensor are beyond those of the D200 and its contemporaries, and that's quite a thing to say. You know, so it certainly is a lovely camera. Carl's image has proven that a JPEG straight out of the camera can be just like a tranny or an egg straight out of a camera, and it really is quite lovely. Carl made a comment about my website. He had a look at some of the images on my personal website and made a comment that about the light, that I have a gift for light, and I appreciate that, Carl. Thank you. I was talking with a young groom-to-be last night, whose wedding I'm photographing in January, and we were talking about that very, very that subject. He also looked at my website and commented on how I love to use light and how I use it well, and I appreciated that. Light is everything, and it's something that you've prompted me to talk about. I think we should revisit that subject and talk about it more often. So I will be discussing not only, you know, studio lighting, which you seem to be quite adept at, Carl, but I'd like to talk about and revisit the notions of using light, composing with light, creating form, shape, texture, those notions using light, and just how important it is, how we can use the light when we find ourselves in, well, not particularly easy circumstances, because we all know what to do when the circumstances are easy, but what about when it's tough? So in future podcasts, beginning, I'd say, next week, what do you reckon, Bruce?
Sounds good.
We can start talking about light a little more effectively. Carl's email has prompted my thought, because this young groom also was saying, you know, he was showing me photographs. He's saying, oh, look, you know, the light and, you know, the colors weren't very good. And he was, sorry. And naturally doing the thing that that amateurs do when they're showing their work to professionals. And I get that. it can be a bit intimidating, I imagine. I do the same thing when I'm showing mine to others. So, but he was basically saying, you know, excusing some of the negative aspects of his photographs. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that he's new in photography. And, you know, he's just learning the ropes. But light really is everything. I think you can even have a photograph that's not necessarily beautifully composed, but if it's beautifully lit, well, oh, man, it can live. So we're going to talk a lot more about that. But let's close off our podcast today with Richard Annable's email, who gave it. I love it when an email turns up in your inbox and it says, Richard Annable, podcast topic. And I go just spit in my hands and rub them together and think, oh, good, I don't have to think this week. and so thank you for that, Richard. Really appreciate that. If you want to get my attention, send me an email that says podcast topic in subject. You can fool me by not giving me any suggestions, but you know I'm going to read it. You know. Richard says, my question, you have mentioned this in the past briefly, but I would like to know how to successfully resize an image up to a larger size. I have a Canon 300D. Well, nobody's perfect. Only kidding, Richard. Only kidding. Nice camera. Which is a 6-megapixel DSLR. I need to get images up to 3,000 by 4,000 so I can sell large size prints. Good on you. All right. Well, I like a man who's confident, wants to sell some prints. That's great. Now, a 6-megapixel, you wouldn't be, I presume when you're saying 3,000 by 4,000, you're talking pixels, or which is... far off that with a 6-megapixel anyway. You're about 2,000 by 3,000, so you haven't got that far to go.
So a multiplication of 4?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So you're just going up, well, you're 2,000 by 3,000 pixels, so you're just adding another 1,000 pixels on each side. But there's a few ways you can do that. And in fact, I have upsized images from my D200 and even my D100, which was 6-megapixel, to, you know, wall size and more, because you've got enough information in a camera of that sort of pixel rating to do that. He asked if you could go into a little detail on how to do this using Photoshop or a third-party tool, I'd be most grateful. I have used two ways of upsizing images, and one of them is with a software suite called Genuine Fractals. And it's fantastic. It's just quite simply awesome software. It uses fractal mathematics to increase the pixels, add pixels to the image, and you can basically go from, you know, your original size to whatever size you want in one shot. You basically, you know, type in the size you want. I want it to be 6 foot by 4 foot, you know, whatever that is in millimeters or centimeters or whatever gauge you're using, and then just, you know, click and off you go. And it will, look, go off and have a coffee. It takes a little while, but you'll come back and you'll have an image that is unchanged in terms of the sharpness, fringing, all those sorts of things. It just does a brilliant job of upsizing your image. You can download Genuine Fractals from the web, and it really is a fabulous piece of software. If you don't want to do that, I recently had a job to do for Kodak, who needed a wall-sized image of a hand holding wads of cash. And in true Kodak form, they said, "Can you shoot this?" And they sent me an image by email, which was these two hands holding, you know, this wad of Australian money. And they said, "Oh, we sort of need it tomorrow." Okay. So not only did I have to find a hand model, thank you to Adam Papworth, my website designer, who has beautiful hands. All right, Adam, sorry. Adam, sorry, mate. Yeah, I know you don't speak like that. Okay. Adam's, you know, happily married man who doesn't speak like that. But he does have lovely hands. And he came around.
And wads of cash.
And, well, that was the other thing. Where's a struggling photographer going to get wads of cash? So I had to go down to the ATM, pull out wads of cash, and make sure I put it back in the morning so my bills could be paid, and take this photograph. But anyway, getting back to your question, Richard, I didn't have genuine fractals on me at the time, and so I just used a Photoshop action that I've set up. In Photoshop, if you increase your image by 10% each time, and you basically just go into image size, you know, 110, you type in that for, you know, the increase, and click, it'll increase your image size 10%. Now, I've set up an action in Photoshop whereby I click that and it upsizes my image 10%. Say if I've cropped 10%, I can just click that, bang, and it takes it back to about the same size as it was, just for printing consistency, etc. But I've also set an action up where I go 10 by 10 by 10 in separate movements. And I use bicubic smooth, 10%, then it does it again, 10%, does it again, 10%. And if I click that enough times, I can take that picture up to almost any size and again have a picture that is without any visible or discernible damage at all. It's that you've not done it in one shot. You know, Photoshop doesn't have to do this huge calculation of throwing in pixels and getting it wrong. If you only ask Photoshop to upsize the image 10% each time, Photoshop doesn't have a problem with that. And then you just do it again. Here, Photoshop, upsize me 10%, upsize me 10%. And you do that each time, and away you go. You just have to sit there and click. And what will happen as your image gets bigger is that each time you click, it takes a little longer. But I upsized this image to 8 feet long. And wow. from a JPEG too, by the way. Up to 8 feet. And I saw the end result, and every pore, I used a good lens. I used a prime lens to shoot it, and every pore, every, you know, all the texture in his skin, all the texture in the money, everything was still there. There was absolutely no loss of image quality. And I just used Photoshop to do that, you know, 10% at a time. And it didn't take long, Richard, to get it up to that size, because as you can imagine, the larger the image gets, you know, the more quantum the leaps it takes in you know, getting your final size. I have a billboard to shoot soon, and I'll be doing exactly the same thing without any apprehension whatsoever. Genuine fractals is fabulous. It really is. But I've also had some excellent results just using Photoshop with a 10% increase each time. Fellow who I work with, who's a designer, he actually has actions set up in his Photoshop that, like mine, 10%, and then one that's 10% by 10% by 10%. So it's, you know, three times. You can just keep clicking that. He also has a 5% and a 1%. I don't know how often he uses the 1%, but he has these set up as actions in Photoshop so that he doesn't have to go into menu, file, menu, you know, image size, type in the number, do it again. It's just an action that he has, and click, 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 and away you go. And it works just fine. And that brings me back to what I want to finish with today, and that is the subject of pixels. I met with a fellow named Craig Gillespie, who's the marketing manager for Nikon Australia here. We were in a cafe, and he was showing me all the latest Nikon compacts and the new D40X, and we were having a bit of a yak about it. And we were grabbing lunch together, you know, lunch and a drink, which was really nice. And he had all these cameras out on the table. The waiter came over to the table, And he was saying, oh, you guys are in the photo industry. And we said, yeah, yeah. And he said, oh, I'm looking for a new camera. And I just grabbed one of the little Nikons that I thought was awesome. And, you know, in front of Craig, you know, I'm such a shy person. In front of Craig, I just said, oh, this one's fabulous. And it's got some, you know, it's really, you know, nicely designed. And the first question he asked Bruce was,
how many megapixels?
How many megapixels?
Did you whack him around the head with it?
Craig and I just paused and sort of looked at each other with a wry smile. One he probably wouldn't have noticed, but his knowing smile. And I just looked at him and I said, you know, you don't need to ask that question anymore. Because the cameras these days have got that covered. Oh, really, do they? But you know, like six or... I said, look, there is no difference between five or six. You know, there really isn't. And, in a compact particularly. And then I said, look, there's much more to a camera than pixels. There, you know, there is the exposure system, the lens system, the size of the sensor, the technology in the sensor. Craig later actually alerted me to the fact that although the D80 Nikon and the D200 are both a 10.2 megapixel sensor,
yeah,
the technology behind the sensor in the D200 is superior to that of the D80.
Yeah.
Even though they both have exactly the same pixel count, along the side, along the top.
How they process it is completely different.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, really, let's get off that horse. You have a 300, you know, Richard, you've got a 300D, 6 megapixel, fabulous, okay? And there's a lot more to your picture taking than that. I'm not saying that you don't know that, but our listeners, please, don't ask that question anymore as the question. Naturally, it's a question that you'll want to ask when you're getting down to tin tacks. But
I think it should be the mission of all of our listeners to try and spread that concept amongst all of your, you know, non-professional photography type friends that, you know, the megapixel count is not the be-all and end-all of how to choose a camera.
No. No, it really isn't. And, you know, I mean, when you bought a roll of film, did you say, you know, is it more fine? Is the Kodak 100 more fine-grained than the Fuji 100? We didn't really think in those terms. We had certain expectations, and we knew the film was going to do what a 35mm film would do. If we needed something better, we'd buy a medium format camera and go to 6x6 or 6x7 centimeters, you know, or 4x5 or 8x10 inches. But we knew that, but... we never sort of went into what we concerned ourselves more with was the exposure system and its accuracy and the lens quality and its accuracy. And we should still do that.
And nothing's changed.
I have a Sony 8 megapixel, you know, all in one that I used in the Silk Road in China, and it's 8 megapixel. And I also had at that time my D100, which was 6 megapixel. Now my D100 produced a far sharper image than the Sony did,
wow,
even though the Sony had a higher pixel rate. Because now the Sony has a brilliant lens on it, it really does. But it's a noisy sensor, much more noisy than the D100, because it's a smaller sensor with more photosites, which creates heat between the photosites and thus noise in the image.
Right.
Fabulous pictures, don't get me wrong. Oh, incredible, really great. But it's not about the pixels. In the end, you know, there are a whole bunch of factors into the quality of our image. So if you've got six, you really do have plenty, especially if that six is on a DSLR, and you know they're not battling for space and creating noise and those sorts of things. So, but I hope that answers your question, Richard. Let me know how you go with that.
And, can I just get you to go back a little way, because I wanted to ask you, because it's a sort of a related question. In Adobe Camera Raw, which you get either through Bridge or through Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
When you open up the RAW dialogue, there's a link at the bottom of the ACR dialogue box, which allows you to specify how many megapixels to interpret the RAW image as.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that?
Yes.
And you can actually increase, like, let's say, you know, because I shoot with my 7D, which is a 6.3 megapixel, it shows me that the default, you know, or the native resolution of this raw image is 6.3 megapixel, but I can drop that box down and I can increase it to, say, 11 megapixels or 24 megapixels or whatever. What is the process that that will use, and is it as good as your stair interpolation method of going up 10% at a time, or does it use something totally different that's not as effective?
It would work from the RAW rather than a JPEG, and so in a sense you have an advantage because a JPEG has issues. You know,
But there's still only so many pixels in there, and it still has to somehow calculate the extra pixels that it's got to generate.
Yes.
So what I'm wondering is that a less accurate way of doing it than using your 10% method?
Not something I've actually compared,
but right.
You know, to give it a comparison, I wanted to speak in terms of, you know, JPEGs because they're a common, yeah. and I wanted to make the point that that we could do it with a JPEG and still end up with a fabulous image, provided our JPEG was good quality.
Yep.
But if we're working with RAW, you have less issues with the image because a JPEG, as we know, has its own algorithm, and you know, there would be
and
certain
it's only got 8 bits.
Yeah, exactly, as against 16 or 14 or whatever our camera produces. And, you know, it has maybe some fringing and, you know, a certain amount of, you know, I'm really needing a second cup of coffee this morning. Artifacting, those sorts of things, depending on how they're compressed. So it would be, I would presume, and, you know, I have not compared it. I don't do a heck of a lot of upsizing, but I would say that you'd probably actually find your image even better. I would even there, though, do that in a step process.
Yeah.
Even with the RAW, right. I would do that because you're only asking the software to throw in, you know, a few extra pixels at a time.
Yeah.
And not, you know, have to make too big a calculation, which it's bound to go wrong in some way.
Yeah.
The difference between the two may be minimal. But, you know, if you've got those few extra minutes to make those gradual, you know, step changes, that's the way that I would suggest. Genuine fractal software, the way you set it up is you can, you know, it says, what size do you want? And you can go straight there. And I have done that, and it is fabulous. I haven't tried it with genuine fractals to take it in a stair sort of or step method, but I haven't found the need. It really just did a brilliant job straight off. Photoshop, it was recommended to me, and that's what I did, to take it in a stair or step method. I would probably do the same with the RAW image, just simply because you're not asking too much of the software at any particular time, and it's going to be a little bit more accurate. If our listeners have had great experiences or bad experiences in upsizing their images, you know, then let us know. I always like to print at about 300 dpi, so I do a little bit of upsizing. You know, if it's a cover image or something, I will submit it at cover size at 300 dpi, which means upsizing. But there's only been a few times when I've ever had to take an image from my 8 or from my 6 or 10 megapixel picture, you know, a digital file up to that size. And those are the two methods I've used, and they've been fabulous.
Cool. Mm. All right, mate. Well, thank you for all of that.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Nice to...
Maybe we could make a future, you know, a whole episode to explain the different interpolation algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Yep. That's a good point.
Put that on the list.
Okay. Interpolation algorithms. Okay.
You know what I mean by that? Like the bicubic and the... Yep. Yeah, there's all those different ones that are in there.
Absolutely. Yep. Cool. We'll do that. And I even spelt algorithms correctly on only one cup of coffee. Interpolation's all over the shop. You know, algorithm. All right. I'm making a note of that as we speak.
Excellent. All right, mate. We will talk with you again next week.
No worries. And we will be talking, folks, next week. We're going to start talking about some very, very important stuff, and that is making light work for your images. When I see images come through, I immediately, you know, when you send me a JPEG, in the email. Immediately, the thing I look for is two things, composition and light. I also look for depth of field because I have a thing about that. But your use of light is so important. It's our gift and it's our toy, and that's what we're going to start talking about. Thank you, Carl, for bringing that to our attention.
Absolutely.
So stay tuned, folks.
Beautiful. All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
You bet. See you soon.
See ya.
Bye.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.